Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. It's Monday. It's the 11th of July, and we begin this week, as we do every week, with John Bailey. He's a White Plains Citizen Net reporter, publisher, and editor. And it's one day after his birthday, so happy birthday to you, John. Always a blessing to have you on.
Thank you.
Thanks for making the time.
Well, I'm retired. I have nothing else to do except report on truth, justice, and the American way, what's left of it. Yes.
Well, I think there's a little bit left of it, so it's important to celebrate it, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, you got a lot of things going on in White Plains, so even though you may be retired, there's certainly a lot of input that one will find at the White Plains Citizenet Reporter, or WPCNR.com for short. One of the biggest things, of course, is the Gedney Association having purchased a property that they're going to redevelop. It'll probably be the most exclusive neighborhood in the entire county of Westchester, and 100 homes, probably
That's
very, very upscale, bigger than anything else.
Yeah.
This bodes very well for White Plains. I think it's phenomenal.
I mean, millions and millions and millions of taxpayer property taxes, if this goes through.
Yes.
Millions. I mean, it will put White Plains so much so that they can have a tremendous tax cut. But,
yeah,
of course, they
absolutely
will do that.
Yeah, but
nobody cuts that.
Whatever they do, the point is it'll be the cachet of the entire nation. You know, White Plains is able to catapult beyond everything in our neighboring states, in our neighboring communities. It would be huge. And I think the amount of political prowess of the city is going to go through the roof. It's absolutely amazing. I hope our politicians are ready for this. They better
be. Is the neighborhood ready, though?
Well,
they did not exactly welcome this with open arms. They just said that the developer presented it to them privately to their board of directors, which intrigues me because this came out in a Gedney Association newsletter. Oh, by the way, we met with the developer, and he said that he wants to build 100 homes, and he listened to our concerns, but not whether they thought this was good, bad, or whatever. I found that was fascinating that he appears before the Gedney Association, and the city isn't there, to my knowledge.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of these things happen not in a formal way, in a formal setting. And evidently they're on the same page and they want to move ahead. Look, the money is huge. And I think the city will benefit by its clout and political prowess. It will put Greenwich in its place.
Yes.
Let's face it.
If you have 100 homes built at an average of $50,000 to $60,000 in property taxes via the assessments, that 100 times 50,000 is what? That's half a billion.
Yeah, exactly.
Half a billion in property taxes in 1 year if they all got built simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is something, that's an offer you cannot refuse, and it is going to lift the housing values in that neighborhood, I would say, at least double.
Absolutely.
If it gets built, and that's what this
is
all about.
Yeah, it will.
Yes.
I think it will. I mean, why would anybody want to stop it? It makes no sense from a financial perspective.
Well, that was the question. Why would anybody want to stop the school when they wanted to put a school in there and preserve 80 mm-hmm. acres? Now, the developer says he's only going to preserve 30 acres around mm-hmm. the lake, the man-made lake in the middle of the property.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is what's interesting to me, that they meet, the developer comes in, meets with the board of directors, not even the whole association.
Mm-hmm.
You see the control in
here? It's an inside deal.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's an
absolutely.
Inside deal. Maybe an inside
yep.
deal. Perish the thought.
Perish
the thought that this is an inside deal. I mean, what? Oh, slap me in the face. How could I say that?
Well, I think it's very, very exciting. It may not be to everyone's liking, but it certainly will promote White Plains to a much greater, I guess, panache.
Panache,
would
indeed.
Be the best word for it.
I mean,
yeah.
And remember, these are homes. The developer
yes.
builds $2 million, $3 million, $4 million, $6 million homes all around the country
yes.
and names of great cachet all around the
mm-hmm.
country. He knows what he's doing. He obviously isn't going to have to go walking around with a tin cup like all our other developers
None.
In White Plains waiting for money to be given to them. And, I mean,
exactly.
to my way of thinking, this is going to happen. It's going
I
to happen.
So.
Now, the question is, how is it going to be marketed? Is he going to build four or five models and then pre-sell, which would be an interest? I mean, I don't know what you do really in real estate, but usually they
As
build
the
three or four models or something, you know, rather than
mm-hmm.
the whole thing at once. But if they decide to build the whole thing at once, that's going to be massive construction. For I don't know, about 4 or 5 years. Now, might be built even sooner. And when they did it in my neighborhood here in White Plains on the old Boy Scout property many years ago, which was supposed to be forever green by agreement when the Boy Scouts sold it to the city, well, lo and behold, it didn't stay forever green. It was turned into, you know, I'd say about 40 homes. Townhouses,
mm-hmm.
and that was built pretty quickly, and they've been very successful.
Well, I think it's going to be very interesting to view the evolution of this whole process and see where it goes.
Yes.
There's so much to cover because so much is happening in White Plains. I guess one of the most interesting is the COVID crisis. We've got a new variant now, which in Europe is really the most prominent of the variants, and it's becoming the majority of the infection rate in
yeah.
Europe, and it's called BA2.75. So, again, though, is Europe more, I guess, I don't know what the right word is, are they more responsive to worry about these variants, or do they take it like a grain of salt as we seem to do in the United States? I don't know myself.
Every week we are told by various leaders, many leaders don't even mention it. They
no.
don't even mention
yeah,
it. The county executive always compares it to, well, we're well below what we were like a year ago or 2 years
mm-hmm.
ago, and that's a false comparison. You have to look at the now.
Yes.
And if you look at the now, we're getting 2,100 new infections a week. That was the total after last week ended Saturday, and that is a lot.
And you point out, and this is very, very important and very pertinent, and it's only starting to come out now from some other media sources, but you're always at the front of getting the information out. It seems that the reports about those people becoming infected have really not been honest, or they've been reduced. So a lot of people are not being recognized as having fallen victim to COVID, whatever the variant is. And why is that?
Because testing is down. The only testing that is counted is lab confirmed testing.
Uh-huh.
And so therefore, whatever infections are reported by the New York State COVID tracker are ones whereby, say, my scenario is that people do a lot of at-home testing and they turn positive and they're really worried. So they go in and have a real test to confirm it, and then they get counted. Now this creates a lag. And so therefore, what you have finally reported each week is a lag. It's at least a 3-day lag. And on top of that, this is, of course, the John Bailey false lag, as it would be labeled by anybody who puts out the stats. And but it's amazing how everything that is pointed out as being somewhat questionable is debunked.
Ever notice that? And then it suddenly turns out
to be true. Wow, who knew? But I'll tell you this. I discovered this just looking at the first report by the CDC, and they aren't using the real population statistics just out in after the 2020 censuses. They are using the ones in 2010. That's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. It is a fraud.
It is a fraud, but what is their intent then? They're not stupid. They know that the figures are off because they're out of date.
Well, it makes things look much worse if you use the way I figured it. You've got about 38,000 persons that more in the new census than you did in the old. About 995,000 compared to 1,004,000 in the new census. That's a big discrepancy.
How do you feel that affects the public? Because they're not as cognizant of the numbers and the constant changing of the numbers and the lack of integrity to the numbers being used.
Yes, I think a lot of people are being fooled. A good example of a lack of integrity is the 7-day average positive rate, is calculated at a number per 100,000 of population. Now, why wouldn't you just list the population of the entire county and then the figures? Why? Because you don't want it to look as big as it actually is. That's the only reason to do it that way. The only reason.
And aren't there ramifications if people feel less vulnerable? Isn't their behavior going to also be more open to being infected or not being as careful as they should? So aren't we driving the equation even further awry? Because we're not telling people exactly what's going on?
If no leader is making it
it's a political
difficult
for them.
Difficult to spread the disease, if no leader is doing that, because they want to be liked and don't want to become unpopular, then they are contributing to the problem.
Yeah.
And right now, as I pointed out a couple of weeks ago, the The number of persons that were infected in June in Westchester County alone is, it was 450 last June, which led into the big summer growth of COVID after it had been totally controlled by the vaccine virtually. That's what happened. And we only had 450 last June. And this time in June, it is astronomical. And it's going to have a big effect, and it already is. We're averaging 330 a week last week a day in new infections in Westchester. Yeah. And what does that mean for July? At least about 1,000 new infections. 9,000 in July.
Well, when we extrapolate the numbers, and now we're going into we're in July.
Yeah.
August is around the corner, and then we go back to school.
The
ramifications with that. Isn't everything going to go awry?
If I'm a school superintendent, I have to be really worried. Because when those kids come back to school, they spread it. They just do.
Yeah.
I mean, White Plains, we had about a 25% infection rate over the year in COVID. 25%.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, of course, considered good. But whatever
it is,
if you want to keep the schools open and people learning and kids learning in school, it's a triage as far as COVID goes.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
what the parents want. And they want less masking. I mean, masks are off. And the big decision superintendents have to be faced is whether they require COVID fully vaccinated as the fourth mandatory vaccination you have to have before you go back to school. That is their big decision. I don't think any of them have the guts to do that. So, because they're superintendents, they don't want to be unpopular.
Uh-huh.
That's the pressure.
It doesn't look like there's a final scenario with regard to this crisis. So we've been suffering for quite a few years. We don't have it under control. Schools are, you know, it's festering with kids and adults, and it becomes a central place for exposure. I still don't understand how we ever got to the point where, remember, we used to say that kids didn't have an immune system, but somehow the kids are not. They don't get infected as much as they could be simply carriers, which is, I don't think it's been fully defined as well.
Nobody likes to talk about it because I always wear a mask because I may be a carrier. The whole point of wearing masks is that if you are a strong enough person so that COVID isn't affecting you.
Correct.
That you don't breathe it onto somebody else. And that has been talked about, and perhaps no one did this more effectively than the former governor of New York State. But now we are rudderless on COVID because the state legislature now controls emergency COVID steps, and they own it. They own it. Because Governor Hochul is not able to issue emergency orders without getting it cleared by the Assembly and the State Senate, and nobody is going to do anything about that till after the elections, where the Republicans hope to gain some inroads by flagging the issues that they are fanning the fires of discontent with Governor Hochul, and they are crime because of crime running rampant in New York City and various other places, inflation. But, of course, the state can do nothing about inflation, but the Republicans can say, we can do something about it, but they won't tell you what. And
exactly.
Then you've got the, as I said, the bail reform, and then guns, guns, of course, and Governor Hochul trying to move on that. And then I think there is a fifth, that these are all bogus issues that are making people worry, but they, and gas prices, of course, gas prices.
Absolutely.
Heating oil costs, which will all be blamed on the Democrats. But what's causing all these price increases is industry.
Yep. That's right.
Industry is doing it. They're profit-taking, as all industries do. The only segments that benefit from war and crisis and chaos are businesses.
Yeah. You know, that was interesting. Talk about business. You know, the baby formula, the facility that had to close because it was infected, so they were contaminated, they just opened up this past week for the first time.
The second week of July, as I predicted
a number of months ago. Yes, you did.
I said, hey, they're not going to get this back until July because they never do things on time.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to warrant them doing that. It's as if they dropped
the responsibility
of serving.
We haven't heard of that in the news, have we?
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Unbelievable.
But and that company has not had a problem yet because nobody has sued them.
No, and I don't think anybody will for some crazy reason.
Well, we have the Supreme Court to thank for that because only individuals can sue, and you can't have a class action suit anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That was a horrible decision by the Supreme Court. But they're good at that. They are good at making very bad judgments based on her.
Well, for them, they become political. They have literally become political, and when they used to be the harbinger of law. So, you know, and I just don't quite get it. But it's all dogma. It's become political dogma, and it's not even explained. So it's very difficult to appreciate, you know, the ramifications of it all.
Yeah, but however, did you see that case in Texas where a woman was given a ticket for driving in an HOV lane, which means a speed lane? Well, this is a fascinating case. It just came out over the everybody's B News wire, AOL News.
Uh-huh.
And what happened was the state trooper gives the woman a ticket for driving in a heavy occupancy vehicle lane, you know, where you have to have at least two persons in the car. And she said, I do have have two persons in the car because I'm 36 months pregnant.
Oh.
Under Texas law, the fetus is a person. It's an absolute issue.
Evidently, yes. That's
in
Texas. Brilliant. Was that
well,
woman
the trooper
a lawyer?
Didn't know what to do, so he gave her a ticket anyway. But that is going to be earned. It's a $215 ticket. And she's fighting it because, hey, I have a person in here. It's just in my belly. Because that's what Texas law says.
I think that's terrific. I'm so
it
glad
is.
That
it just shows you how stupid
so
these
smart.
Lawmakers are. They're stupid people.
Exactly.
And they should have thought of that.
I
mean,
don't know how they couldn't.
No, they didn't think of it. But this young woman, very
smart. It would be
smart.
Interesting if that woman, I wonder if that woman is a lawyer or if she's just a regular, you know, woman and doesn't have a law degree. She probably is not a lawyer and she figured it out. Good for her. God bless
Look,
her.
I tell you, it's very tough giving a woman a ticket because they will invent an absolutely plausible reason why you shouldn't give them a ticket.
Well, that's the
reason. They're very
the
good at that.
You shouldn't give them a ticket.
What do we guys do? We say, geez, I'm sorry, officer. No,
yeah,
you have to say, look, I felt if I really slammed on my brakes going through this life like light, I could really have caused a terrible accident. That's what you do. You have to realize why you made the decision to do it instantly and try and explain it that way. But anyway, I thought that was fantastic, and that is going to be a number of problems. Now, does that mean that if you're buying an airline ticket in flying out of Texas, that you have to pay for two fares because you're carrying a second person in your universe?
Oh, my God.
What an absolute boondoggle for the airline. Windfall with the airline.
Well, I don't think they'll be able to get away with that because, well, they wouldn't be able to get away with that because I think that they don't need to take up extra space in the car in the plane, right? They don't have to get another seat, do they? Well, unless the lady says I'm carrying two more children.
It's an issue. Children don't ride free.
Uh-huh. That's a good, interesting point. Absolutely right.
They
go
man,
for half price.
Don't tell the airlines about this. No, this is why you have to truly think out legislation before you do it to achieve an objective. That's what happened with bail reform in New York State. Nobody thought about it.
Yep, that's exactly right. And look
Nobody
at the mess
thinks.
We're in
Nobody
now.
Thinks in politics. They just do what's best for them. Not for you.
Why do we vote? Why do we vote these people who are just not doing what is important for us? It's not like a balancing act, a 50-50, you know, between the parties. So why is it that we don't seem to have a means by which to really extrapolate all these issues and bring it forward? You know, a lot of this stuff goes unnoticed until it gets passed, and very little is said about it beforehand. And then they pontificate from the seat
public,
of power.
It's never discussed.
No,
it's always behind closed doors.
Yeah.
Particularly in Albany. And it's just an example of why thinking should be done, and you have to have a lot of public crisscross. But unfortunately, that can be taken to the extreme. In Westchester County, we have the new public forums that are held every time we're trying to discuss something like what to do with the Westchester County Airport. And they have people coming in, well, I don't like the noise, or I don't like so many flights and all that. But it's not what they like. They don't have any expertise at all.
No, they don't.
They don't know anything about aviation for the most part.
What I find interesting is why is it that there's a complaint about it now? They're living there.
Yes, and they are living there. Look at that big rich development, Belfair, right by the airport. Why would you build that? But people bought those expensive homes. It's a real hazard because if you ever had a plane limping in and they couldn't make the runway, they're right into that development. Really, it's a safety hazard. They won't cut the trees down at the end of the runway, northeast runway there, which creates what they call in aviation a displaced threshold. So you have to go over the trees, and then you lose lift because trees have cut off your wind, and you have to drop down and allow for that to hit the runway safely. And
very fascinating.
And they now cut it down because Greenwich doesn't like it. It's unbelievable. As Greenwich goes, so goes the county. We make more decisions about Greenwich than we do about the county, for God's sake. Because
well,
it's
John,
Greenwich.
Based on
there will
that,
always be a Greenwich. There will always
be
a Larchmont. There will always be a Scarsdale.
Yeah.
There will always be a Grosse Pointe, aptly named.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean,
listen, John, we're
going
to have to get going. What an
exciting
morning. a great way to open up Monday.
For those I have offended.
Oh, I don't think you have, John. I think people are not so easily offended anymore.
That's right. And
you
remember,
well
when buying an
healthy.
Airline ticket, don't let them charge you if you're pregnant.
Exactly. And I would be there to demonstrate for them.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
Every woman could count on me to come in and say, no, you shouldn't
yes.
charge them.
Oh,
take care, John.
No,
all the best
this is
to you.
This is making Texas a laughing stock.
It wouldn't be the first time.
Yes,
all right,
exactly.
We're going to have to go, John. Take care.
Okay, fine. Bye for now.
Okay, well, that's John Bailey, the White Plains Citizen reporter, publisher, and editor. And now we're going to move on to none other than Michael Edelman. He's a lawyer, of course, national and international political pundit. So good morning, Mr. Edelman. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Hezzy.
What a pleasure. Today is going to be a very interesting day because we're talking to you. It's a great way to start off on a Monday. One thing that's really, really very interesting is this whole issue with Elon Musk and his $400 million tax break for walking away from the scene. Is he going to be able to win, even though a lot of legal minds are saying he won't be able to win, even though he asked for a tabulation of how many bots or computer systems access
mm-hmm.
Twitter, and Twitter mm-hmm. didn't give it to him. So isn't he in the right?
He may very well be. Twitter may be protecting its reputation by announcing it's going to sue him when the bottom line may be that they in fact have too many bots on the platform. And, you know, you've got to pay for real people, not for nonsense. So I don't know. I didn't read the contract. I know if the contract on them, disclosing the number of bots and whether that has to be an accurate disclosure, I don't know. I haven't read it. But basically, I think if they refuse to give him the number of bots, he cannot ascertain the value of Twitter.
Uh-huh. That makes all the logical sense in the world. Amazing. Well, we're going to have to see where that goes. That's like the challenge of the century. It's going to be fascinating. He seems to no longer be interested, I guess, because he doesn't have the numbers. And all of a sudden they threw this harangue in at the end where they say, prices for major corporate structures have gone down in value because the stock market has suffered. So he's looking to get a better price. I guess everyone's looking for a better price. But
I don't know
not
what,
if
I don't
they can
know
prove.
That he's actually I don't know that he's a serious buyer.
Neither do I.
I don't know. I don't know. He says and does things that, are wacky. So I don't know if this is a serious bid or whether he or a friend of his had options on Tesla, and then when they heard the buyout price, the options became more valuable, and then they sold the options and made millions. I don't have no idea. I really just something I don't know about.
Okay, well, we'll eventually find out as the weeks unravel and unfold. I want to ask you about something else, which is very interesting when we're talking about abortions and the ruling by the Supreme Court. Evidently, somebody's floating the idea of getting an abortion clinic proposed in the Gulf, in the Gulf of Mexico, to bypass the bans. That's going to be very interesting.
Offshore? An offshore clinic and
offshore.
In a ship or something?
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. So that's going to be unbelievable.
The whole notion that a 10-year-old who's impregnated by her brother or her father has to go three states or 1,000 miles to get an abortion.
Unbelievable.
Because it's illegal in her state is really nonsense.
It
and
really
that's
is
why you're seeing the outrage. I think the Republicans frankly screwed themselves. As long as they were spending time prior to the decision in Dobbs, as long as they spent time giving mouth to what they wanted to happen, it was fine. But once the Supreme Court, which was stacked with conservatives, finally acted to make come true what these conservatives have been and Christian nationalists been screaming about for decades, now you're going to see people come out and vote against them. Because they don't want these religious principles imposed on the rest of the United States. And that includes many people of faith who understand that
Absolutely. There's
a separation of church and state, and they can believe
yeah.
whatever they want to believe and conduct their lives however they want to conduct their lives, but that doesn't mean everybody else has to kowtow to that. So I think this may be a turning point in the midterm elections in terms of who has the advantage. We'll just have to let it play out, though, a little bit more before we see the polling results show up.
It was very interesting. I spoke to John Bailey from the White Plains Citizen that reported before you came on.
Uh-huh.
So he was mentioning that a woman had been stopped by a police officer, I guess on a highway patrol person, and he wanted to give her a ticket because she was riding in the express lane for more than mm-hmm. one passenger. And she
uh-huh.
claimed that she was pregnant with two children. So
uh-huh. Nonsense.
It's nonsense? Okay.
Yes, it's nonsense.
She wanted to make believe that she's really driving with three people.
No, but see, that's how nonsensical the people that believe this bull is. The law, the regulation is clearly aimed at a passenger who is alive,
right.
well, and sitting in the passenger seat to be counted
mm-hmm.
as the second individual. You can't have a dead person there. That doesn't count. And you can't have a pregnant
exactly.
lady in the driver's seat claim that she's got two kids because she doesn't.
Okay. Well, that's going to be very, very interesting to see where all this goes. I just hope there's a little bit of lucidity in people's minds. It gets a little crazy, that's for sure.
You've got mail.
What's going on about are we moving away from having so many illegal guns out there? Is the law of any pertinence whatsoever? Because I suppose there were some people who are getting guns, even though they get
yeah.
it legally, and yet they're killing
yeah.
people with it.
Well, in my view, the only way to stop people from killing with automatic weapons is to ban
yeah.
them. There's no reason not to ban automatic weapons. We had a ban during the Clinton administration on automatic weapons, not the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And during that ban,
right.
ban, the amount of mass shootings went way, way down. And as soon as that ban
yeah.
expired and was not renewed under W, they went back up again.
Mm-hmm.
So that's proof of the pudding that a ban works. And there's no reason
mm-hmm.
for an ordinary citizen to have a gun whose sole purpose is to kill as many people as quickly as possible. There's no justification
makes
for
no
that.
Sense
this is not
to
a
me
second,
either.
It's not a Second Amendment issue.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know. I don't know where we're going with this, but too many people are getting killed, and so
the government has
the
right to regulate. The government regulates you when you drive your car. You got to wear a seatbelt.
Yes.
The government regulates
mm-hmm.
Many industries that are spewing off toxic chemicals. The government regulates
yeah.
environmental things. The government has a right to regulate a weapon of war to keep it
mm-hmm.
from the hands of regular citizens. It belongs in the hands of the military and the police.
Amazing. Well, other things are really happening with regard to the January 6th insurrection. Of all people, I never expected this. Steve Bannon, the former White House
yeah.
strategist and ally of
yeah.
Donald Trump, he's facing
right.
criminal charges after
mm-hmm.
defying the congressional subpoena. He now says
yeah.
he's going to show up. So is it that
mm-hmm.
he's scared to go to prison?
Nah. It's that he wants
no.
a platform for yelling and screaming and carrying on. And they're not going to allow him a public
mm-hmm.
showing of his nonsense and his ideas,
uh-huh.
which are the right of Attila the Hun. They're not going to do that.
Right.
If he wants to show up and testify in private, they'll ask him questions. And if he answers them honestly, we'll get answers. But he's not. This is the showman. He's there for a show. He wants to defend Donald Trump. He wants to say, he wants to talk about the people in government that are, you know, controlling everything that you can't see. So, you know, the state. He's going to talk about that. You don't want to hear that. Nobody wants to hear that. That's conspiracy stuff. That's QAnon stuff. Nobody's interested in that. If you know anything about the Willard Hotel, Mr. Bannon, and what was going on in the Willard Hotel while Donald Trump was trying to retain power, we can ask you about that and tape it, and then we'll show your clips of the tapes in the next hearing.
Wow. Unbelievable. Also, what's going on with the monkeypox virus? People are going a little crazy over it. The number of people infected in the U.S. has gone up to 700 people. It's evidently very contagious. I don't think
you
it's
don't
a
die
lot,
from it, though.
But
you don't.
And it supposedly does go away after about a month. A
couple of weeks. So it's the equivalent of chickenpox.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and they
the
do
deal?
Have an antidote for it, don't they? Which is similar.
I think they do.
Yeah. So why are people going a little crazy? Is it because they call it a gay disease? But it didn't start with gays. It started with monkeys.
I don't know. It started with
you
monkeys.
Know,
yeah. But well, maybe they were
the
gay monkeys.
To
they could have been gay monkeys.
Oh, Okay, you never know. I don't know. I didn't talk to anybody. I have no witnesses, so I have no idea.
Look, this is people are scared because of the pandemic. You know, the pandemic was underrated by Donald Trump, and it turned out with a million deaths. So a lot of people, there are many people that don't trust anything they hear about any new disease, and they're panicking. But monkeypox is not. They'd be better concerned about the B5 variant of the disease, which is spreading more than monkeypox. And right now, New York City actually ordered wearing masks again if you're indoors or if you're in a tight situation. So that is more concerning than monkeypox.
I got to ask you, though, it seems that more and more people are being drained and being less patient about wearing masks than they used to be. It's like they're exhausted by the equivocation of the CDC and things that come out. There's a lack of honest telling with reports and statistics, and they're using old figures and outdated figures. What's going on? Yeah. Why aren't we listening as much? Or is it that we can't really do anything about it? So people say, oh, the hell with it. But it's your life, isn't it?
Well, you know, there are a lot of people that didn't wear masks in the first place. There are more deaths. There are more deaths in the red states where there was anti-vax and anti-masks, and where the governors didn't pay any attention because they wanted to fight the CDC and the doctors and the experts. So there's more deaths in red states than blue states per capita.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is. They turned the medical issue into a political issue for no good reason.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, it was very interesting. There were some reports now. It seems Biden is now 79 years old. And one of the articles, that the title is Biden is Testing the Boundaries of Age and the Presidency. You know, I remember growing up when there were people like Konrad Adenauer from Germany.
Yeah.
He was in his 90s. Yeah. Golda Meir, I think she must have been in her 80s or late 70s, whatever. Why are we making such a big deal about it?
Well, first of all, the two examples you gave, those are historical figures. And they were historical figures at the time they were in leadership roles. Joe Biden is not a historical figure. The issue is that the poll just came out today. 64% of Democrats do not want Joe Biden to run again. I personally don't want Joe Biden. I don't want anybody who's in their 80s to run for president. It's far too complicated a job befits somebody who is well into their eighth decade. These people, the president gets up early in the morning. He's got a full schedule.
Yeah.
He flies here. He flies there. He goes abroad. He comes back. He's got to be exhausted. You can tell it in his voice. I'm exhausted.
I'm exhausted
him.
Doing
so
the same thing.
We want people want younger leaders. Younger leaders. Both parties. Don't forget, Trump's no youngster either. He's 74.
Right.
Biden, Hillary, 75 or 4. Chelsea Schumer is the youngest one of them all, and the rest of the leaders, like Nancy Pelosi, they're old. Steny Hoyer,
they're old.
They're all pushing 80. So, it's a healthier situation when you've got younger people who are spry, who have more energy, whose minds work quicker, and who tend to surround themselves with different people from different generations. So that's what I think.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you. I don't want someone my age. It's not like I'm diminished mentally, but even so.
That's not the point. Do you think I couldn't keep up the schedule? I'm 5 years younger.
I couldn't keep up
the schedule. There's no way
schedule.
I can get up at 6 o'clock and then go till midnight.
No, I couldn't.
Without a martini
at
4.
Maybe a day or two or three, but not every day.
No, every day for 4 years.
Forget it. No, I wouldn't have it.
Exactly. So that's why 64% of Democrats do not want Joe Biden to run again. 64%. Yet in the polling, Biden was beating Trump 44-41.
Mm-hmm. Well,
across
that's
all
probably
parties,
still because of Trump's attitude. He's still a very abrasive character, and people don't believe him as much as they used to. I guess, a lot of stuff is happening now, and he's being found out a lot more than he ever was before. So I think
the
investigation is going to diminish him more, I would think.
Well,
you never know. But
tomorrow's investigation, I think, will be the nail in the coffin. Because tomorrow they're going to demonstrate the connection between the White House and the Proud Boys, and between the White House and the Oath Takers, between the White House and the radicals that stormed on January 6th. And that will leave no doubt as to what Donald Trump was doing, who he was talking to, and whether he was part of a conspiracy.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, I guess there's going to be a lot that we're going to learn. That's for sure.
Yep.
Hmm. What about that situation about the young girl? I think she was only 10 years old, and they didn't want to give her an abortion because she had an ectopic pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't we have rules
for rape by her father, wasn't she?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely, on top of that.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So, I don't understand, how do we concoct these rules and regulations under law and under lawyers who should know what they're talking about? And if they don't, they should recuse themselves and say, I don't have enough expertise in this particular subject. What are we doing here?
Well, it doesn't require a lot of expertise to figure out that whatever abortion law is on the books, if it's banning abortion, should have exceptions carved out for rape, incest, and the life of the mother. These don't.
Right.
That's the problem. The problem is these trigger laws went into effect in the 1930s when nobody was thinking about exceptions, and when Roe, which legalized abortion across the country, was overturned, these laws were still on the books. And the laws that we're looking at in Ohio, Mississippi, places like that do not have exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the shame of the whole thing. You know, you'd think there'd be some compromise between pro-life and pro-choice people. So, you know, ban abortion after X number of weeks, okay, and then put the exceptions in, except for rape, incest, and the life of the mother. And then everybody's happy, except for the right heritage society, white nationalist Christians that don't want any abortion under any circumstances.
Well, where do we go from here? Is there a focus by the presidency, or is he very, very much involved now on the international landscape? You know, he's still concerned about Ukraine, still about Russia, the impending starvation of so many different countries in Africa and the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
What can the president do? Or can the president do anything?
Very little about
abortion. Are we going to blame the president for this?
Well, some people will blame him for not being, for not using his bully pulpit enough, and for not giving lip service. There's nothing he can do. What is he supposed to do? There aren't any laws.
You can't feed people by talking.
Well, only the legislature can pass laws. Okay, so there's very little he can do, and for people to criticize him because of that is silly.
And when we think about the age difference of someone like the president who's now 79, are we building, are we fortifying a new cadre of people who may be in their 40s and 50s and 60s who might be better adept at managing this sort of unbelievable schedule from 6 in the morning till midnight, 7 days a week,
no holidays, no nothing? Plenty of people in both parties that are quite capable of being president.
But we don't
Other
give them a
Trump
chance,
Biden.
Do we?
Well, why not? No, we're
right.
going to give them a chance. How do you give them a chance? And
well,
you can't give them a chance in the middle
we?
Of a term.
No, I understand
primaries,
that. But...
Primaries determine nominees, okay?
Next
time the race comes around, both parties will have an opportunity to nominate somebody other than Joe Biden and Donald Trump. When you say we, if you're registered in a party, you get in your state, you get to vote for the person you think should be running for president. So yes, we get a chance, but it's every 4 years. This is not the British system where there's a loss of confidence vote and you have to resign.
Right.
That's
exactly.
not what this is.
No,
this is a republic where we elect people to serve for 2, 4, or 6 years, and then you get your chance, and not before.
And what do you think, based on where we are today, is there really a chance that we won't be split apart as a nation? Are we going to get the answers that we need to reveal exactly what happened under the former president's guidance and all the stuff that
we'll
he played? Will that make a difference for people?
It'll make a difference for
you
some
think
people.
So?
Make a
well,
difference
again,
for enough.
Some people never get
he
convinced.
He lost the last election anyway.
Yes,
he lost
did.
In 2020. So he's not going to be in a better position in 2024 than he was in 2020. He was an incumbent Republican president who couldn't win a second term. He will not be in a better political position by the time we get to 2024. He simply won't.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got people in his party that want the nomination. They're running already, including Ron DeSantis and plenty of other governors that and senators like Ted Cruz that want the Republican nomination. And he's going to have a fight in his hands. It's not going to be a gift. And once we get through all of these hearings, people will understand the depth of his corruption. And yes, there will be some in the base that still support him, but there'll be plenty more that do not.
Mm-hmm. What about the rights of, let's say, like a Virginia Thomas? She's married to the Clarence Thomas, the Supreme Court Justice. But
what about her
she
rights?
She was working. Does she have a right to influence her husband, or is that just you can't separate the two. They're married.
But the problem isn't Jimmy Thomas. The problem is Clarence Thomas, because his wife him in a situation where he's conflicted. She's not
Correct.
Conflicted. He's conflicted.
He's
got
conflicted.
The conflict because his wife is involved in stuff that comes before him.
What should he have done? He should be recusing himself. In all those cases where she's involved.
Yeah. Anytime she's involved in an issue.
Why didn't he do that?
That he has to
why
rule on,
he that?
He's conflicted. Because
but
he
why
doesn't,
didn't he do
he
that?
Doesn't
it seems so simple.
Why doesn't he do it? Because the Supreme Court doesn't believe that he's bound by the ethics of other federal courts and state courts.
Uh-huh.
He believes he can do what he wants because he's Supreme Court Justice, which is exactly why he shouldn't be there.
Exactly. Amazing. Would there be, can the U.S. government as a whole, as a body, can they vote against this happening again? Would you be
no.
permitted to you can't do that because people can get married to whomever they want.
It has nothing to do with who he's married to. It has to do with what she is involved in.
Uh-huh.
If it was his daughter, it would be the same thing. If
right.
it was his living girlfriend, it would be the same. He's got a conflict, okay, because it's an appearance of a conflict because it appears that he's being influenced by his wife's agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And it also appears,
and
by
her,
the way, that
and
he
her money
to his wife about what's going on in the court.
Yeah. Wow. Unbelievable. Who would have thunk we would have gotten to this place? I certainly didn't. Were these sort of things thought out in the past, or are these things just like thrown in our face and nobody knows what to do about it?
Well, that's a good question.
Supreme Court Justice.
I don't think we've had that situation before where a Supreme Court Justice is conflicted by a relative. So
I don't remember.
It is what it is. Yeah.
Unbelievable. So what do we have to look forward to in the coming week? Anything that you could
tomorrow.
See on the horizon?
Tomorrow's hearing.
Tomorrow's hearing is going to be a mind blower.
God. That's going to keep us busy for a week. it is. It's going to keep us, because all the talk shows on Sunday, all the talk shows next Sunday will be looking back on that on tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, from a political perspective, it certainly is going to engage a lot of people.
Correct.
Are people still listening? I would hope that they are.
Yes. Yes.
Well,
yes, they are.
That's good, at least. At least you're not tuning out or turning off. So that's important. Well, unfortunately, the time goes by too quickly when I speak to you. We'll probably be talking about this next week after we find
Absolutely.
Out what happens tomorrow. And,
Absolutely.
And we'll go from there.
Okay, I'll speak to you next
yourself.
Monday. Yep,
All
you
the
too.
Best to you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. Be well. Bye. Well, there we have it, folks. None other than Michael Edelman. He's a national as well as an international political pundit and analyst. Most people cannot say that, but he's got the capacity not only to do one, but to do the other, not only nationally, but internationally. I think it's absolutely brilliant that he has all that capacity, and that, more importantly, he has the depth and the understanding. And above all of that, he can climb above the political dogma and tell you the way it is. And that is such a rare gift, because so many people are tied to one party or one set of dogma, as opposed to saying, well, this is what makes sense to me, this is what makes sense to others, and this is where I sit, and this is why I sit there. Just brilliant, brilliant thinking. So that's why it's always a pleasure to talk to him. So bear with me a moment as I move on to our next guest. Should be on very, very shortly. We're going to be speaking to Robert Keston. Robert Keston's going to give us a call. He's the executive director of the People's Movement for Human Rights Learning. And you could actually learn more about them by going to a website, which is pdhre.org, which stands for People's Movement for Human Rights Learning. So pdhre.org. You could also find it on our website in case you can't find it otherwise. And just very interesting. It's a nonprofit. It's an independent and as well as an international nonprofit organization. It works on human rights globally, and they have a Universal Declaration of Human Rights as the backbone of their work. Oh, I see Mr. Keston is already on the line. Bear with me a moment as we pull him in. Good morning, Mr. Keston. How are you, sir?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Okay, what a pleasure to speak to you, as always. Always look forward to be able to start the week with you. So I have to wait every second week for that to happen. But it's always good. One thing that's very exciting, as you're the director, the executive director of the People's Movement for Human Rights Learning, which was founded in 1988. The integrity of the movement is defined by its writing, which speaks to organizing human rights globally. Universal Declaration of Human Rights is the backbone of your work, and so on. Is it too lofty a concept for a lot of people to recognize? Is it too much work to acquiesce to this sort of a respect for other people, whoever the other are, and even to for ourselves? Sometimes we're just as bad for us as we are for others, but usually worse for others as opposed to for us. Why hasn't the concept elevated to a much higher level where it seems to be uppermost in people's mind? When they open their mind, they open their eyes in the morning, and when they shut their eyes at night, they believe in the Declaration of Human Rights, no matter what, no matter color, no matter sex, no matter gender, no matter religion. What's the problem with human standard? I don't get it.
Well, it's quite simple, and that is that when you don't know, you don't know what you're missing. When you don't know, you don't know what you have. When those who have great resources want to keep you in the dark, they do what is necessary to keep you in the dark. And so for many decades now, there has been an effort to downplay human rights, to relegate it to the dump of history rather than make it a paragon of virtue. And so therefore it's not well taught, if taught at all. It's not shared. Mm. And so people remain ignorant. And if you want to keep what you have out of fear that others will take it away, you do not want people to know that they too have rights. And so you keep them from them. And that's what we have. We have this terrible concept of scarcity in a world of plenty. And when you have that, and you can convince your followers that if you open the door, they will take what you have rather than what we all have will be expanded. Now, if you look at history, you certainly know that that is the case. But if you don't look at history, you can be frightened into being a reactionary, into being a racist, into being a sexist, into being a homophobe, because all of these people in your mind are taking what you have, even though nothing could be further from the truth, because the more we expand human rights, the better everybody else lives, and the more boats that float, the safer world we all live in. And that's
why
it's
so true. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and that's why it's so dangerous that we live in a time now where government-sponsored actions are trying to ban books, limit the ability to discuss and engage other people, and are turning people that are unlike us, even if it's slightly different, into pariahs rather than to fellow citizens. And just Saturday, what I've been working on was on the front page of the Sun Sentinel newspaper in South Florida. It covers Broward County and its surroundings, on the fact that we got books from a public school system, that were targeted by the Florida governor's Don't Say Gay legislation, and we were able to distribute them to hundreds of children and families rather than seeing them destroyed or at least taken out of circulation. And we're now on a campaign to get other school districts in states where books may be taken off the shelves of classrooms and libraries and make sure that they are recirculated to those families and children who can use them.
And can you define, because I can't, I mean, I think I grew up in a family. My parents taught me how to respect other people. I didn't always know who to respect or who not to respect, but I used to look to my mother, my father, and ask, well, I've never seen anyone like that person or this person, and they never seem to have a negative word to say about other people. So what is it that we're afraid of? Are we afraid of being challenged by someone who's more brilliant than I may be? Are we afraid that they have more money than we have? What is it that causes us to, I don't know, shrink away from them and to create a storyline that diminishes them in our own mind, even though if we go back and say, well, where did this hatred, why did I despise these people? There's nothing there.
Well, the hatred and whatnot comes from, you know, historical human nature. When, you know, the beginnings of humanity, people lived in family units. And you were competing for very limited food sources and shelters. And as those family units grew, the rules and regulations of how we lived together changed. And the outsider was still a threat. And ultimately, then we lived in cities, then we lived in nations. And the rules changed, and our proximity changed, but the outsiders were still the enemy. France was the enemy of England, and England was the enemy of Germany. And that was because people still believed that things were limited without looking at the fact that there were now more rich people, now that there was more food being harvested, that there was more clothing being made, more houses. So it never really made sense, except by keeping people fearful that their futures, that their children's futures were at risk, it became easier. And ignorance is the most dangerous and most powerful tool we have for keeping people in line, for keeping people oppressed. You know, that's why this book thing that we're working on through the organization called Stonewall National Museum and Archives is so vitally important, because it's taking books and putting them in the hands of people who can use them. And that in and of itself is a threat to those who want to keep us oppressed, because the more knowledge we have, the better informed we are, the better society we are. But it limits the power or the potential power of those who want to rule with no recourse, with no democracy.
So what is it? So I guess there's a baseline where there are people who are scared for their own safety or for their rights, and there are other people that don't have this issue, what makes them so secure? Are they secure that they don't believe that somebody will try to undermine them? What is it that gives them that extra panache to keep going forward and to fight for their rights as well as other people's rights?
I think that the people who do that, the Eleanor Roosevelts, the Nelson Mandelas,
yeah.
the Martin Luther Kings, they
mm-hmm.
don't see an option.
Uh-huh.
They don't
see an option. That's really brilliant.
You know, they believe that people are equal. They believe
uh-huh.
that people are valuable. They believe that all of us have to do what is absolutely the right thing to do, even if it is difficult. And in Martin Luther King's case, even if you are risking your life on a daily basis, that
mm-hmm.
none of us individually are nearly as important as what we can do collectively. And
mm-hmm.
as I said before, the more we can float all boats, the better we all live. And those
so
kinds
what,
of people.
What, yeah.
Yeah, go
those
ahead.
Those kinds of people what? Well,
they're the ones that make the world change.
Yeah, they do make a change, but how is it that they get their concepts? How do they relieve the fear in some that may be ignorant today so that they move eventually to a point where they say, yeah, there's really no problem. I can still maintain what I believe in, and others can also gain their status and their capacity, and it doesn't impact me in a negative way. Why don't we see that it doesn't hurt us if somebody else is successful?
To be there, you have to, one, not be afraid, and two, you have to have information.
Mm-hmm.
If you are informed, if you have access to information, then you can be open and accepting. If you are fearful,
mm-hmm.
if you believe that anyone who is different from you is the enemy, look, Florida instituted a new set of rules for teaching civics.
Mm-hmm.
Teachers are now complaining that the new civics code, which is expected to go into effect with the 2023 school year, is basically a Christian white bill of goods.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really accommodate or make room for anyone who is different. It is not civics at all. It is antithetical to civics.
Mm-hmm.
And teachers, and there are many teachers who are complaining, but the majority of teachers are too afraid of losing their jobs.
Yeah.
We have to inspire confidence. We have to inspire self-reliance. We have to let people know that we have their backs and that they do not have to be afraid. But we can't do that if we ourselves are afraid. And so we need the information. We need the context. We need to build those levers of support so people can do what they have to do when they have to do it, and that those who are in the firing line know that they will be challenged and supported so that we can move forward.
So if the state of Florida moves in that direction where they rob rights of some and embellish rights of others, and there's now a divide, how does that stand legal scrutiny? Is it that our legal system has also been maligned by our political dogma?
Well, we know that the legal system is being challenged as we speak.
Yeah.
And
uh-huh.
we know that many of these right-wing efforts are intended to find their way into the courts where they hope that they will win out based on the fact that there is a more conservative, and I use the term conservative in a in a very loose definition, because I don't believe mm-hmm. that these people are conservative. I think that they are reactionary and prone to violence much more than they are a classical conservative. But
yeah, I agree.
Their goal is clearly to limit the rights of others. And there are members of the United States Senate who have clearly stated that not everybody should have the right to vote, that it was never the intention mm-hmm. of the founders that we should live in a democracy. That is so unbelievable to hear in the United States of America, where every generation not only has normally done better financially than the generation before it, but has also garnered more civil and human rights than the generation before it. And mm-hmm. now, not only do they want to limit the financial capabilities and quality of life, but they also want to demean and retract our human and civil rights. I mean, this is why this period of time is probably one of the most frightening, because it's not just strange groups of organizations or individuals out there, but this is government-sponsored terrorism, and that is something that we all need to be on guard against.
Well, how does one guard against this when it happens? We look at what happened with the January 6th insurrection. Everything blew up in front of our eyes, and yet most of us were kept blinded because it wasn't even reported. And there were people who believed in the dogma or how they were being proselytized with the so-called news, which wasn't news. And look how long it's taken for us to find some of the reality that has been exposed. Is it conceivable that people, once they learn a story, will recognize the validity of it, or will they still go their separate ways and still point a finger of derision and ridicule?
As I said, it all depends on how well we inform and educate, how broad we are in telling the stories that need to be told. You know, as long as history is biography, we tell everybody's story. Everybody has a story to tell. And right now, we edit which stories we're willing to hear. So we don't ever really learn the full impact of history. We learn a very specific history, which is really more akin to biography. And the biography
so
of a few people. Pardon?
We're truncating the facts. We pick and choose what we want, a little bit from column A and a little bit from column B. But at the
right.
end, it's deficient.
When you study the American Revolution, we are rarely, if ever, told that the revolution was fought by a very small number of people and did not necessarily, when it started, have majority support in the nation. It wasn't a nation. It was a bunch of colonies.
Yeah, right.
We don't know how that happened. We don't know how that evolved. You know, we read about the Boston Tea Party and this event and that event and the stamp tax. And we think that this was universally a universal outrage in the colonies, when that wasn't necessarily true. When we hear about the Civil War, we hear about X, Y, and Z happening, but we don't really get the full accounting. What was it like to be a German in America at that time? What was it like to be an Irish person at that time? What was it like to be a woman at that time? And how did all of those different people survive, and how did they contribute to what led to a massive war on our soil that both united and disunited the country at the same time? Because we're still living with the ramifications from the Civil War, because we've never learned the history of the Civil War. in many states across this country.
I came to America. I never learned any of that.
Most people who were born in America.
The entire nation was all on one page.
Right. Not true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just we learn pieces to give a comprehensive story that therefore is not comprehensive. And when you learn it that way, you don't learn what really happened and how it happened and why it happened. And so then we are bound to continue the cycle that started that whole process. So now, once again, we're at a place where racism and homophobia and sexism is okay. We know that it's not okay, but now there are groups of people, massive groups of people, a big percentage of our population, not the majority, but a large percentage of the population, who once again believe that they are entitled to speak out and speak their hate. Because their leaders are telling them that it's okay.
Yes.
Because we never learned
the
lessons.
To be permission.
I mean, another great example, in the 1970s, there was Anita Bryant. And she was the national spokesperson, right? She was the national spokesperson for Florida orange juice.
Yep.
And then she went on her campaign to save the children, which was a very straightforward attack on the rights of the LGBTQ community. They are going to destroy our children. They are going to destroy our families. We've got to get rid of them. We've got to do anything in our power to get rid of them. And finally, Anita Bryant was defeated and her campaign was defeated. But it wasn't defeated. It was put back into hiding. And now, all these years later, from the 1970s to the 1920s, to the 2020s, we now have a Ron DeSantis. So the only person who really learned the lesson of Anita Bryant and the power of her message was Ron DeSantis, who is now using that to launch a presidential campaign.
Yeah.
Because the rest of us grew complacent. The rest of us believed that Anita Bryant was defeated.
Mm-hmm.
They were not defeated. It's the same language. It's the same tropes. It's the same memes that were used back then that are being used today. So a Ron DeSantis' spokesperson comes out and says, anyone who is for gay rights, for LGBT rights, is a groomer. They just want to take our children and turn them into their sex toys. That is an outrage. And yet, person for the governor of the third largest state in the United States.
Yeah.
And there are no repercussions for her saying these absolutely outrageous, horrific, and violent words. So we
learn. How do you eclipse that then? Is there a way to eclipse that?
Information, media. People have to do their job.
What do we write? What do we write?
What do you write?
You
write the truth. You get you get the stories from the people who were ignored. Who were the people who were missing from those pages of history? What do we know about George Washington's slaves? Very little. Now, would it be possible to rewrite that history? Very difficult. But we should not be making that same mistake today and ignoring those very same people. We need those stories. We need the story. Why are people homeless in the richest country on the face of the earth? Why are people without medicine in the richest country on the face of the earth? Why are we making education a political tool? Why are we making a pandemic a political tool? Why do we make housing political rather than humanitarian? That's because we've never learned the stories. We've never heard what this means to people and how it affects them and their children and their children's children. And because we don't, we continuously recycle the same things, the same hatreds, the same poverty, the same misinformation time and time again. It's not that long ago that we went through the HIV/AIDS crisis. And now we see those same cycles repeating with the COVID epidemic. And now we see the same thing happening again with the possibility of monkeypox. And we see the same thing over and over again. Why? Because we didn't learn. And the people who are exploiting our ignorance, our lack of information, are the ones who have learned those lessons. While the rest of us, the majority of us, have grown too complacent and too comfortable with living what seemed to be a nation that was moving in the right direction. While surreptitiously...
People who wanted to supplant, you know, the people who were balanced in their thinking and not biased, they got the lesson. Why did we not get the lesson?
No, the biased people got the lesson.
Okay, why did they get the lesson? Because they wanted to supplant those that felt comfortable with the reality of balance and lack of bias?
That is correct.
They wanted to control the narrative. That's what they're looking
for. What they're looking for is absolute power.
Uh-huh.
Their method of getting it is to instill fear and loathing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And if you don't have the information to rebut them, start to side with them. They're the ones with the guns. Okay. They're the ones with the pickup trucks and the waving flags. They're the ones who show little or no fear. Which side are you going to be on when the...
Sorry, I missed you. Which side will you be on when the what?
We're going to go inside and pull the shades and lock the door, and they will have control of the streets.
But,
and that's why all of us have to be outside. Signing a petition online is useless. Take back the streets.
Right.
Take back the city halls. Take back the state houses and the legislatures. Do not let the Ron DeSantis's and the Abbott's and the others have the control that they have because they put the fear into all of us that they will hurt us if we come out against them. Teachers are afraid. Administrators are afraid. Librarians are afraid. Colleges are afraid. Local governments are afraid. Because the people that have now got access to the bigger pocketbooks are not afraid to use them. And they've got to be fired. And the only way to fire them, hopefully, it's still through the voting booth. But as they've changed voting laws, as they've changed our ability to organize and trust our elections, they are mounting this unbelievable campaign that we will never be able to trust our system again. And that is their hope, that we will lose confidence and faith in democracy. And that the rest of it will be theirs. Got to make sure that that doesn't happen. But even people like Ron DeSantis
Are people mentally arming themselves to recognize it?
Certainly there are many people who are talking about it now. But is it enough? And will it get through? And will it get through to the people in the middle? I mean, we're all fighting for the people in the middle. Nobody is fighting for the people on either extreme. It's all about the people in the middle. And those are the people who are most easily frightened because the struggle to get through each and every day makes it so difficult for them to pay close attention to everything that's going on. And without that time to get informed, without that time to gain information, it leaves them at a loss when all these pieces of information are thrown at them haphazardly with ulterior motives. And there are ulterior motives on both sides, on all sides.
Yeah.
But the difference in the scope and the intention is what separates good from bad.
Mm-hmm. And is there a compendium anywhere that people can look at if they're interested?
Well,
or is it just
the best thing to do is look at the best media you can.
Media
that doesn't have all these ulterior motives. But for those who want to dig more, there's a book called Democracy in Chains, an excellent book that gives a historical view of why we are where we are today. It doesn't tell you what you can do about it, but it certainly tells you how we got here.
Okay.
It's important to know. It's also important to read things. Oh, I can't remember the name of the book now. It was about...
That's okay.
The author was Mayer, and she was a professor at Massachusetts, MIT. She was a history professor at MIT. And it's something about the Constitution that she wrote, about the Constitutional Convention and ratification. It's called Ratification. And she shows how the 13 colonies agonized over agreeing to the Constitution. And you can see where some of those problems that existed then in coming to terms with approving the Constitution and who were the first states and who were the last states and why still live with us today. And the misinformation, once again, that this was a working document, not something that was given by God and set in stone, but a working document that needed to be changed and abridged so that it would grow with a changing nation. Those things get lost as people do all that they can to assume power. And it is a problem. It is a big problem. And it's a problem that we have not overcome, and it is not a problem that we have learned to deal with because we do not give history the attention that it deserves, and instead we make it about biographies, about leading individuals of the time, and we leave out the masses of people who are still the masses of people and will continue to be the masses of people, and we leave them ignorant of the role that they and their ancestors have played in the history of the world. And those stories.
What are we afraid of? Are we afraid of telling them the facts as we know them?
No, we're not. That's the fear. The fear comes in not from those who are telling the stories. The victor tells the stories.
Yes.
But the victor is only part of the history.
Correct.
The other part of the history has to be told. And until
so
that
is where we're
told,
failing, because we're not incorporating the whole.
Exactly. We're only learning one part. And as long as we only learn one part, the other part keeps repeating over and over and over and over again as people struggle to survive. And that struggle for survival is easily manipulated because you always feel that you're at risk. So if you're an American right now and you're in the middle class and prices for food and gas and housing are and healthcare are going up and up and up and up, you panic. And who do you blame? You blame who those people who are in powerful positions tell you to blame.
Right.
You've got to blame the immigrant. You've got to blame the people who are lazy. You've got to blame the people who are in finance. You've got to, and it's all the tropes that have been there throughout history that have told us who the good guys are and the bad guys are without telling us why, without telling us the history of those people, without giving us any real indication of why they are the enemy. And that is the problem we face. We want somebody to blame, and we want someone to blame because it can't be us. So it's the gays and the lesbians. So it's the blacks. So it's the Jews. So it's the Muslim. So it's anybody other than me. It's their fault that I'm having a difficult time. It's their fault that gas prices are high. It's their fault that there's global warming.
Wow.
And the manipulators are very good at what they do because they have written the history and they continue to write the history, and they are the ones who control the pages and the video and the other things that we see because they're the money behind it. And that is the danger that we face going forward, is that we're not telling our stories. We're not being heard. And so we're being pushed back into closets, pushed back behind closed doors, because it's too hard to see what's going on around us, and we don't want to be complicit.
So
how many Germans said that they didn't know what was going on?
Many.
Most of them, when they were interviewed, I had no idea that the Jews were being killed. No idea. Because they closed their doors, they pulled the window shades, they locked themselves in, they just didn't want to know. Even though there are pictures and videos of entire towns dancing in the streets as they marched the Jews out.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember seeing photos when they had the gas chambers, and it wasn't an enclosure. It was out in the open. There was no way to not smell the stench of skin burning. It's just impossible. And people deny it to this day. It's amazing. It was the history. And who knows, it could be repeated again. You never know where. So what is it that causes people to be so fearful that they won't tell their story? They've been silenced for so many years. People didn't know about World War II, and it took, I don't know how many years, for some, but not all the stories to come out. And they're still coming out. Who knows what the atrocities were in Ukraine that just took place and are still taking place, or in the Middle East where there's no food because there's no grain, or in Africa. It's unbelievable.
Right. And
so
how many of those stories do we
open up?
How many stories? What cause? People have to be given an opportunity. People like you, people like the New York Times, people like PBS, they have to give people an opportunity to tell their stories over and over and over again until people are forced to hear them. Because people do not want to hear those stories. We don't want to hear over and over again what happened in Biafra. We don't want to hear over and over again what happened in Kyiv at Babi Yar. We don't want to hear over and over and over again what happened to the slaves in Mississippi, Alabama, and Louisiana. We don't want to hear what's happening to the people who live in the Amazon area in Brazil. We don't want to hear those stories because they make us feel bad. They make us feel impotent. And then other people say, well, it is their fault. They brought this on themselves. And we say, ah, I feel so much better. Now I can go back to my life. I can go back to McDonald's. I can go back to Burger King. I can do what I need to do to survive without feeling bad. And then they pass laws in states like Texas and in Florida and in Alabama that you can't even teach or say things that make people feel uncomfortable in a classroom or in a work environment. If we don't feel uncomfortable, how do we grow? Well, they don't want us to grow. They don't want us to be bigger than who we are. They don't want us to become the next Martin Luther King or Nelson Mandela. Because if that happens, then they and their leadership is under threat.
Mm-hmm.
Information, real information, broad-based information is the threat of every dictator and every wannabe dictator. The more information that's out there, the more challenge, the more people are made to feel uncomfortable, the safer our societies are.
Mm-hmm.
Complacency is a death threat. And
wow.
That's where we're heading, as people's fear outweighs their ability and comfortableness in being courageous.
It does feel that people are more fearful now than I remember. I'm in my 70s. I don't remember it to be this bad 40 or 50 years ago. I don't know what
happened.
And
it wasn't. Well, it wasn't if you were white. But 40 or 50
uh-huh.
years ago was the end of Jim Crow. And, you know, if you weren't white, it wasn't such a great world. So we forget
mm-hmm.
that when we were comfortable, it was because somebody else was the underclass.
Was uncomfortable. Mm-hmm.
Was more uncomfortable. And their freedom came, or some of their freedoms came, by us feeling uncomfortable and realizing what we were doing to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was when we became uncomfortable enough that Lyndon Johnson was able to pass massive pieces of legislation that transformed, or at least started the transformation of this
right.
country, that this Supreme Court has repealed as
yeah.
unconstitutional. Because our Supreme Court currently believes that inequality is constitutional, equality is not. How
yeah.
dangerous is that?
Hmm. Yeah, and who would have thunk it would have come from Lyndon Baines Johnson, of all people? But he was the power, and Kennedy was not. It's fascinating. Wow. Well, very, very interesting, to say the least. Well, that means I've got a lot of work to do, evidently.
As do we all. But yes, being in media, you have a very big responsibility.
Yeah, I know you're right. It's sometimes extremely difficult to even get reality out there. It's amazing
yes.
pushback. Unbelievable.
Absolutely.
I never realized it.
Absolutely. People do not want to have to feel discomfort. People do not want pain. People do not want any of the kinds of things that are absolutely vital for us to move forward as one nation
mm-hmm.
in liberty and justice for all.
Why do we believe that when we don't live it?
Because it makes us feel good about ourselves.
Uh-huh.
It's as simple as that.
That simple.
We want what makes us feel. Why do we eat chocolate cake? We know it's not good for us.
Mm-hmm.
It makes us
feel
good.
It does. I remember the good taste of chocolate cake, but I haven't had that in a long time. But I know it's not good for me.
It's certainly
so,
not.
Yeah.
So then we convince ourselves anything in moderation.
Oh, yeah, right.
Also not true.
Well, I threw that out the window eventually, too.
Right. It's
it
better
work.
To admit, right, because it's better to admit, okay, I'm going to eat this piece of chocolate cake. It is not good for me, than to say if I have a smaller
right.
piece of chocolate cake, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Because
that's
then
what
you
I
have
used
the
to
next
say.
Little sliver. Right, cause they,
right.
And they say, well, just a sliver more. It's just a sliver. And
yeah,
then the cake
uh-huh.
is gone. What happened to that cake?
Right. Exactly.
Because you did it in moderation. It's still gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's still clogging your arteries. no, moderation is not always the answer, and everything in moderation is not the answer. Reality is the answer. Facing facts mm-hmm. is the answer. Information is the answer. Knowledge is the answer. And it is not always comfortable. It is not mm-hmm. always going to make you feel good, but it will get you to a better place.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, what do you think? You think it will? Is it too esoteric to review the People's Movement for Human Rights learning? Is that? I found the language was a little bit too lofty for, I guess, most. I didn't know where to go with it. I mean, I tried it for quite a few weeks, but it just didn't seem to resonate. It was the language was too high. Am I wrong about that? Maybe I wasn't looking at it the right way.
The language is pretty simple, I think. I mean, from the declaration uh-huh. itself. If people don't want to hear it, that is something else.
Okay.
You can't.
Well, yeah, there's probably a lot of that too.
I would think that there's mostly that. I mean, who doesn't mm-hmm. want to be treated with dignity?
Yeah,
who doesn't
I would
want
think
to be
that
treated
would be a given.
Dignity?
Yeah.
But when you have to treat other people with dignity, well, that might be a problem. And that's mm-hmm. where the problems come in. That's when people don't want to listen. If I have to do
okay.
something, not good. If they have to do something to make me feel better, that's real good.
That's okay.
Well, it's
mm-hmm.
a two-way street.
Right.
It's a two-way street. To have a really successful neighborhood, every neighbor has to be a good neighbor,
mm-hmm.
even you. And
yeah.
not everybody wants to be the good neighbor, but everybody wants to have a good neighbor.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I mean, that's how simple PDHRE is. That's how simple
mm-hmm.
it is. Be a good neighbor. Be a good parent. Be a good child. Be a good person. Treat others with the respect that you would like for yourself. The golden rule. It all comes down to the golden rule. That is exactly what the Universal Declaration is.
Are we treating anybody with respect? Or is everyone getting
that we treat some
to some
people,
degree
you know,
or another?
It's arbitrary. You know, some days you treat people
yeah,
with respect, some days you don't. How often do you say hello to people on the street, even if they look at you like you're crazy? You know, it's those kinds of things. It's acknowledging other
mm-hmm.
people's existence. When you see a homeless person and you say good morning, you are acknowledging
that lately. I've been doing more of that lately. I don't know why. I really have no clue why.
Maybe because you're
say
starting
to
feel. It's the
yeah.
it is those little things that make a difference in other people's lives. Being acknowledged, being seen, hearing their story, seeing them as another
yeah.
human being. Even if you can't do anything specific to help them, acknowledging
mm-hmm.
them, not ignoring them. Everybody wants to belong. Everybody wants to feel that they are a part of the community
yeah.
that they live in. And when you say hello,
yeah, definitely.
Hold the door. Say thank you when
yeah.
someone holds the door. You know, those little things make a huge
mm-hmm.
difference. Save books from being banned. Save them from being destroyed. The little
mm-hmm.
things that we can do will make a big difference if we all do them.
Yeah. It really is amazing. I don't even know why. I don't know. There's somebody around the corner from where I live, and it's near a library, and they were sitting there on the bench, and I said hello, and his name was Willie, and I gave him my name, and it was we spoke for like a half an hour. I don't even know where I found the time to do that. but I did, and
you did.
It was amazing, and I don't know. It was weird. I don't know I just don't know where it comes from. What was the impetus for that? Maybe I should.
The impetus was you're finding the better part of Hezzy.
Oh really? Well, let's hope so. You know,
it's never,
you know,
too late.
There are limits to how much time you've got in this world to get it to get it right. I would think. So maybe
there,
we
have time. We have time immemorial to get it right. We just have to keep trying to get it right. That's
okay.
The question.
That's the question. Okay. Sounds good to me. Well, any last words from you as we come to the end?
I've spoken enough words. Now it's time to get back
to action.
I think
we have to live it. We have to live
that's
the world
right.
Now.
We have to live it every day. We have no excuses except we can make all the excuses we want. None of them are good.
Right.
None of them are good. We don't have an excuse to destroy our world.
None.
And therefore, our obligation, our sole obligation, is to make this a better place for people and ourselves.
Hmm.
And all it takes is opening the doors and opening the windows and shouting out in the morning, "Good morning, world." That's
mm-hmm.
a start. Just like in the old Sidney Lumet film, Network, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. Well, we've done that part. And we continue to do that part. Now we have to do the other part, which is
mm-hmm.
recognize that other people are there too. And they're suffering.
Exactly.
And they're in as much pain as we are. And we can make them feel better just by saying hello.
You have to overcome.
Don't let the politicians push us into closets and close us away.
Oh, definitely not. Yeah. Did you find that
make
you have to overcome
it.
Your own pain before you could?
No.
You could.
You are overcoming your own pain by helping others.
Uh-huh.
You are
so
finding
where,
your inner
mm-hmm.
goodness by being good.
Okay.
Our so much of our pain comes from not feeling welcome, not feeling that we belong, not feeling
uh-huh.
included. So if someone's not going to include you, include them.
Okay.
Don't wait for other people to take your pain away. Your pain is there very often
mm-hmm.
because you are a product, like everyone else is, of a dysfunctional world.
Mm-hmm.
So if the world won't correct itself for you, then you have to correct the world. And you do it one step at a time.
It took me all these years to get it together. I can't stand it.
See?
I should have been talking to you 50 years ago.
But you're getting there. And you're doing the right thing. And you'll probably, make a big, big difference in your community. And the communities that you serve.
All right.
Just by saying
Something. There's a challenge.
It's a challenge, but it's a manageable challenge.
It is.
You know, people say,
it's
so big. Yeah. Well, it's not so big when you get it down to people. If you see somebody,
mm-hmm.
if you have an extra banana and you drop it with someone who doesn't have a banana, you'll feel better,
mm-hmm.
they'll feel better, and that goodness goes out into the world and counteracts the horrible things that we see every
mm-hmm.
day. It doesn't make them
yeah.
go away,
but mm-hmm.
it's the balance. It starts to balance out the bombings
yes.
and the shellings and the shootings and the horrors, because that little bit of goodness is bigger than an awful lot of badness, because
right.
it gives people
right.
hope.
Yeah, perfect.
Giving people hope. Good morning, almost afternoon, and
yes.
have a wonderful rest of your week.
And you too, sir. All the best. Thank you very, very
much. Thank you. Speak to you soon.
Robert Keston, executive director of the People's Movement for Human Rights Learning, and you could find all the postulates that he's put together with other people at a website called PD, P like Papa, D for Delta, H like Hotel, R Robert, E Edward, .org. So PDHRE.org. And the People's Movement for Human Rights was founded in 1988 by a woman. Her name is Shulamit Koenig. And so really very, very important. I think you'll find it interesting. So if you go to our website at the Yonkers Tribune and you look up Robert Keston, you'll always find that when we promote the broadcast, we always put this information in there, the PDHRE.org and the People's Movement for Human Rights Learning. And if you want to learn how to spell Robert Keston's name, it's K-E-S-T-E-N. So that's how you'll get there. All right. Well, a lot of lessons to have been learned, and hopefully I will remember them. I'm working on them for sure. Anyway, so be well. Take care. And we'll speak to you tomorrow. Oh, let's see what we have. Oh, yeah, tomorrow we're going to talk about the Constitution, the United States Constitution, as we do every Tuesday, with Professors Jeffrey Swartz from CMU Cooley Law School, the Tampa campus, with his compatriot, also a constitutional lawyer, Brendan Beery, also at CMU Cooley Law School at the Tampa campus. So brilliant people, explain it very well. And I think it is a learning experience for me. I think I've learned more from them on so many levels. Maybe that's, you know, their telling sometimes may have informed me as well. Because I don't know if I became so brilliant in the last year, but certainly reaching out to more people, and don't know why. Well, maybe it is just respecting of other people and recognizing that they're human beings as well. So all those things come into play. Anyway, so that's the story. We'll wish you a good day, and hopefully you'll join us tomorrow. Take care. Bye. Okay.